Holly and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
You know, I was sick last week, and week before last, I should say. And you know, when Paul was had abandoned us to go to Florida, and heart sick is what I was, Paul.
Yeah, heart sick.
Are you sick, or are you sick of Paul?
Well, yeah, all of the above. But the great thing about it is that it afforded me the opportunity to get caught up on a comic that I had stopped reading, not because I didn't enjoy it, but because we don't ever talk about it on the show. And I got all caught up on Greg Rucka and Michael Lark's Lazarus, which I mean, oh, I think I had that? Like, oh my God, it's fantastic. It is so good. And I have to say, you know, one of the reasons it was easy to stop reading it was that the book is so dense, it's almost hard to read it month over month, you know, because there's just so much that happened in the prior book. It's almost like you got to reread the prior book before you read the current book. Well, I got caught up on like 20 issues of that. While I was
you were really sick.
I got to where I didn't want to turn the light off to go to sleep because, you know, I was enjoying what I was reading so much because the stories are just so good. And the thing about Lazarus, and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, Lazarus tells a near dystopian future in which governments, as we know them, have all fallen away. And really, everything has just sort of descended into oligarchies that are run by these families, right? These super wealthy families. And the families are the only ones who get to enjoy full liberty, full rights. They have what they characterize as serfs, which is like the next level down. And these are the trusted associates of the families. And then everybody else in the world who are not either family or serfs are regarded as waste. And I mean, they are just cannon fodder. Nobody gives a shit about them. I mean, the book really has a lot to say about our, you know, the path that we're on in our socioeconomic journey. But it also follows, you know, kind of like near future genetic science. And each family has a warrior, a champion that's called a Lazarus. And they're called a Lazarus because they seemingly can return from the dead as long as, you know, they haven't been beheaded. You know, they can heal almost any wound. And so each family has their own champion. The book is not real clear on why they don't just make an army of these guys. But it's super good. It is super good. And I thought that it was done. I didn't realize until I read the last page of the last issue that Greg Rucka and Michael Lark have taken a year off to fully bank the remaining like 14 issues of the story so that it all comes out on time. Anyway, I highly recommend it. In fact, I'm going to shoot a note over to Scotty Bonner, our librarian friend, to recommend that he stock it in his library because it is super good.
Find with books we don't talk about, I said they're the last ones I'll read. And so occasionally it'll be I'll pick up an issue one of a title that looks really interesting. And then issue two will come out and I realize I haven't read issue one yet. It's like, do I buy issue two or do I wait until I read issue one?
Well, I kept buying Lazarus because I wanted to support the book, you know, like I said, it wasn't because I wasn't enjoying it. It was just, it was a heavy read. And Greg Rucka even says this book writes really slow. You know, that's one of the reasons they had gotten off schedule was him, not the artist. And I get it because the book is so dense and he provides so much back matter in each of those books. There's usually an essay and a short story and a letters page. I mean, the books are big and thick, much like Paul.
Yes, that's two C's, not a CK.
But, you know, I supported it all the way through. I bought the monthly issues on each one of those. But man, it's just fantastic. I really can't recommend it enough.
Well, you know, one of the books I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I commit to read for this podcast and talk about recently, Image released a new Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips hardcover. Called Houses of the Unholy. And it's like an FBI crime drama involving satanic, you know, set during the satanic panic period. Right. I love Brubaker and Phillips. I love their graphic Same. Novels. And so that's what this is. And this one just sounds right up my alley. So I'm going to give that one a read. Yeah, I'm a little behind on my reading as well. You know, I kind of.
Is that a recent, that one, is that a recent release?
Came out about 3 weeks ago.
Huh, I did not see that. I'll have to pick that up.
Yeah. So I do want to pick that up. And, you know, it's to Wayne's point, like where there's so many event books and, you know, kind of focusing on the things we talk about. I'm behind on some of this other rando stuff. But I did pick up a Comixology Unlimited when I traveled to Florida recently. I picked up a new Comixology Unlimited graphic novel. If you're a Comixology Unlimited member, it's, you know, included in the cost. It's a graphic novel from Stephen DeKnight and Michael Gaidos. And so Michael Gaidos is the artist who, you know, most known for Alias with Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, yeah.
And Stephen DeKnight, most known for being the showrunner on Daredevil and, you know, multiple other TV shows as well. Daredevil on Netflix. He's no longer the the showrunner. And so this is, it's called Beneath, and it's set in a kind of border patrol jail, and creatures that come up from the ground. And, you know, it's very much a horror story, very much a done-in-one story. It's a little heavy-handed on the metaphor. You know, obviously anything set in a border patrol will be. So, yeah, it's a little heavy-handed on that. But it's actually a pretty solid crime story, horror story. Well, I guess it's technically another like crime slash horror mix. The Michael Gaidos art is great. It's really creepy little story. It's a one and done, 124 pages. And if you're a Comixology Unlimited member, it's worth checking out. It's a quick read despite being 124 pages. But you know, it would probably make a pretty solid little you know, horror movie that you could watch, you know, late night on Netflix or something.
Interesting.
Yeah, Beneath is the name of it.
I think I've got, like, the first issue of that. I think I bought
it. Well, maybe I just read it collected then, because the one I read was a one, one book one.
And maybe I'm confusing it with something else, but it's ringing a bell.
Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah. It's pretty solid.
Well, you know, a book that was challenging to read this week was Absolute Power number 3 from DC Comics.
This book is so inconsistent.
Well, it was hard to read both on the meta level as well as on the actual level, because when I bought it on Wednesday, it was not device compatible. I had to return it.
And yes, same here.
Yeah, so it could not read it on my iOS device, and I was like, huh, that's interesting.
I had two comics fall into that category. I had this, and I think I had Scarlet issue 4, maybe. I think it's the latest issue, 3 or 4. Two of my most anticipated titles this week. It was issue 4, and both of them had that issue.
And what was funny is that, I mean, like, Absolute Power was going to be, like, the first book I was going to read. Yeah. And, you know, because I was going to read it before work on Wednesday. And, yeah, I wouldn't go. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? And I was like, I haven't had any coffee yet. Maybe that's the issue, you know?
Yeah. I didn't read it until last night, so I didn't have any problems with it. But one of the other books we'll get to, the Avengers, Aliens versus Avengers, I've been reading more on the actual website instead of sending it down to my iPad. Mm-hmm. And the guided view on that was just completely off. It was skipping to the wrong panels, and thankfully it was fine on the iPad, but on the website, it was unreadable. And you can't really zoom right on the website like you can on the iPad. So
I have some issues with the 0 hour guided view. It's more and more it doesn't seem like the guided view is being directed by a human. I feel like they're running it through some sort of AI algorithm. And more I feel like a lot of that isn't capturing it. So instead of it zooming into a discrete panel, it'll show you like a quarter page. And I found that in the 0 hour book quite a bit. So, but you know, I did get my issue resolved. I was able to finally download Absolute Power, and you know, well, now my reading problems with this book are resolved. But no, I there are whole big moments in the book that I'm just like, where the fuck did that guy come from? And who is this person?
I found this book incomprehensible.
Yeah.
And not to be mean about it, but for me, this, you know, I felt that way about issue one. Then issue two got better. And now we're in issue three. And, you know, for me, this book, it's like someone said, hey, you have to fit 7 issues worth of story into 3, so make it work. That's how this feels to me. There's so much going on, and it's so chaotic. And to your point, like, where did that come from? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah, and they introduce new characters that are, like, a handful of new heroes, I guess, that show up out of nowhere. And it's like, you have enough main characters here that you're not following. Why are you giving us new characters that we don't care about?
And I gather that some of this stuff is happening in the, you know, peripheral books. But there is a scene where the big moment, the big resolution moment, all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of the big boss fight, Batman appears with a mother box. I'm like, what the fuck?
You know? And I'm sure that's happening in the Batman book, which I did pick up, but I haven't read. But you have to put wondering how Batman got here. Check out Batman issues, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my big frustration as I'm reading through. It's like they'll mention something and then it's just happened.
Yeah.
And I get that they're trying to pull you over to the tie-in books, but it's just it doesn't feel like I'm reading a story. It feels like I'm reading the between the pages of the actual story that's happening in all the other books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Superman also just suddenly appears on the same page that Batman does. There's no indication that the two of them were traveling together. It's just so weird. I don't know who thought this was a good idea. I don't know if this is an editing problem or a writing problem or what. But, you know, this page that was supposed to have so much weight and emotion, I spent my whole time going, the fuck? You know, and went back and I'm like, what did I miss? Was there a bunch of action on a panel and I didn't see Superman and Batman walk in the room? You know,
no, and they're focusing on like this here, I guess. I don't know what the character's name is, even offhand. The one that can ride the radio waves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is like, why, again, are they focusing on these minor characters that we know very little about instead of the main characters that we've came to the book to see?
Or if they're going to introduce a minor character and elevate him, do that. You know,
yeah.
Make me care about this guy. Don't give me a panel or two where I'm going, well, who is he? You know, I hate to say this because we all love Mark Waid and Dan Mora, but this Absolute Power may be one of the worst crossovers I've ever read. Not because the quality on the page looks bad, just the storytelling, visual and otherwise.
Dan Mora art I like. Let me clarify. I do like Dan Mora art, but it is, you know, it doesn't – the storytelling of the art does not
bad.
Solution for the lack of cohesion.
Well, an editor should have sent this back. You know, an editor should have said, okay, we need a page between this one and that one because it makes no sense, right? I'm inclined to believe that, you know, knowing – the talent and skill that Wade and Mora bring, I feel like this is an editing issue, that someone was not editing this book harder.
Yeah. So I will say something positive about the book, though. I really liked how they came up with to deal with Bizarro.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I thought that was good, too.
It's one of the few things I can say positive about the book. They give him the alien plant that gives you your fondest dreams. Well, in the case of Bizarro, it goes from the fondest dream to nightmares because he's the reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Absolute Power, there is a good story in here. It is not, but the execution is poor. Yeah. I think they, you know, the moments in here that could be that they're trying to make emotional could be emotional. The battles they're making here that are big and impactful could be big and impactful. But I think I don't know if it's a DC mandate or Mark Waid, but it definitely feels like a movie that started out as 3 hours and they told them they had to cut it down to 2 hours.
Yeah.
And so
cut it to 90 minutes.
Cut it to 90 minutes. And then literally all you get is the action. And it's like, whoa, Superman's here. And here's the thing. I bought the Batman tie-ins. I haven't read them yet. So that I'm sure that'll explain the mother box. I am reading the Superman tie-ins. And, you know, I'm, you know, and we're, those currently are is not with Superman back in this scene. Right. So, you know, Superman at this point is still in the Oblivion bar talking to Neron. Is how the latest Superman tie-in book and Superman 17. So, like, the timing isn't even working, even if you read the tie-in. So, I mean, I hate to be so harsh on Absolute Power, but it honestly makes me a little bit concerned about the Justice League book that's coming out from Mark Waid and Dan Mora.
And the last page cliffhanger here, haven't we had enough of the multiverse, you know, evil versions of these characters?
Yeah. And it's got to be wrapped up in one issue, right? There's only one more issue of this.
Yeah,
and I mean, for them to introduce something new at this point.
A completely new concept for Waller's army. After they've done all of this with the Amazos, they start hinting that the Amazos have, gotten the hero's morals and things like that. And they're building up.
Yeah, and I'd like to complain about that. So they find out that the Amazos are absorbing not just the superhero's powers, but also perhaps their morality. And Amanda Waller's, do you mean to tell me that, you know, morality, goodness is a superpower? And I'm like, okay, first off, Amanda Waller doesn't think of herself as a bad guy, right? I mean, so, because that's what that seems to juxtapose, like, I'm a bad guy. You're telling me that the good guys, that's a superpower? That just bugged me. And the way that was stated, I know they were clarifying for the reader, but that just really, you know, I think that it's the overwhelming commitment, you know, the overwhelming identities of these heroes is what's affecting the Amazos, not the goodness, you know, of their superpower being that they're good.
Yeah.
That just bugged me.
And it just feels like with this ending, they're bait and switching us.
Uh-huh.
Like, they've built up what they were doing with Waller, and now she's got something else entirely, because she's always got to have a backup plan.
Right. Yeah. I'm disappointed. I really am. I'm in for the last issue, but man, I this book was incomprehensible and just frustrating as all get out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we'll see
how issue 4 wraps up. I would say watch the last issue lead right into another crossover.
Oh, I think
a multiversal crossover.
Completely. I think you're right. I think it's going to be a cliffhanger. It's going to roll into a next thing.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, we did get a reminder of a good crossover, this past week. 0 Hour 30th Anniversary Special came out, which was, 0 Hour, obviously, 30 years ago. I think it was called Crisis in Time was the subtitle.
That's what they renamed it.
That's what they renamed it to apply a crisis moniker to it. Because, DC's, just like with Marvel. Well, I guess, does Marvel have something the equivalent? I guess not. DC, you throw a crisis on something, then you know it's kind of a continuity reestablishing crossover.
The closest and, Marvel has is Secret.
Yeah, Secret on Secret War, Secret Invasion, yeah. So, but this is our 30th anniversary special, co-written by Dan Jurgens and Ron Mars, featuring, a murderer's row of artists who were all mostly, I think, artists on the original 0 Hour book. I think there are a couple of exceptions in there.
Well, and certainly artists in the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I think that the big deal was, is that they either were working on 0 Hour or they were doing a 90s era book.
And a series of pinups featuring some other artists that were not part of the main book. So you get like pinned by John Bogdanov, Chris Sprouse. I mean, people who were also big in the 90s, just not part of, the initial storyline here. And so, this is very much, and I know Wayne, you did not get a chance to read it. So let me put it out there. This is very much a Wayne book in that it is very focused on Kyle Rayner and Batgirl Barbara Gordon. Basically the story here is that Kyle Rayner has uncovered a pocket universe created by Parallax, but basically like a pocket. It's not the original Parallax. It's like a pocket universe version of Parallax.
Right.
In which the major events of the 90s stuck, which is to say that Bane broke Batman's back and that Superman is still dead from his battle with Doomsday. So Supergirl has taken on the mantle with the black Superman costume, which is pretty badass. Mm-hmm. And Donna Troy is taken on for Wonder Woman, even though I don't recall if it said what happened to...
I don't think they talked about what happened to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and I don't think Wonder Woman had a big crisis-y type thing in the 90s. She did not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Aaron, what did you think of Zero Hour 30th Anniversary Special?
I have kind of a love-hate relationship with this book. There's a lot of things I like about it. I certainly enjoy revisiting our 90s era characters. Like, for instance, I loved Guy Gardner Warrior back in the day, even though he is not correctly represented here as Guy Gardner Warrior. I sure did love that era of Guy Gardner stories. Let me start off with what my big complaints are about this book. And it's the complaint I have about a lot of these reunion style books or, you know, nostalgia style books, is that instead of an accurate representation of what those books were, they put on a little current era spin to them and they make them different. And the first thing that glared out at me about that in this book is the fact that on the cover, Hal Jordan as Parallax is not drawn correctly. He doesn't have the gray temples, right? He doesn't have the wings on the side of his head. And as the story's going on and we kind of see Hal Jordan, I'm like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's because this Hal Jordan is, you know, a sliver phantom creation. You know, he's not the original Parallax. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's the story reason why he doesn't have the wings. But then when Kyle is remembering the original Zero Hour events, the depictions of that Hal Jordan as Parallax also doesn't have the wings. And that just pissed me off. It was just one of those things that just, guys, why did you do this? Why didn't you draw it correctly? Right. Same thing with Guy Gardner. He is not drawn as Warrior. He's wearing a different suit. Why is that? Why aren't the characters drawn the way they were in those 90s books? Right.
I mean, I thought Guy Gardner was drawn as Warrior. What is his costume then?
He had a lot of like body paint stuff going on.
Oh, that's right. He's like he's like an armored iteration of that.
That's right.
Though.
Yeah. But it just bugged me. Why not represent those characters the way they were drawn in the 90s? And I was doing a whole lot of, you know, trying to understand this world that we were in until they revealed that, you know, it's an alternate pocket 90s era universe. So those are the things that this kind of like, come on. But the things that I loved is I loved seeing Jack Knight Starman. And I thought they did a nice job representing Jack Knight. And it's one of those things I'm like, why the hell haven't we done another Jack Knight book? You know, that the Starman was a successful book in the 90s for a time. It was a top 10 book. It was an Ennis award winning book. An Eisner award winning book, I should say. I just don't understand why we haven't done that. And I know that for a long time they had held out. So because the writer wanted to come back, James Robinson wanted to come back and write on it, or, you know, would kind of direct the next iteration of Jack Knight. But that's been 30 years. You know, why not? Let's do another Jack Knight book. And it's one of the things I was like, man, I sure do miss that. I liked a lot about this book. I particularly loved all the different artists coming back and working on this stuff. But
yeah, I always love seeing Tom Grummet back on a book.
Yeah.
I love Tom Grummet art.
But if we're writing 90s era, DC books, why is Lex Luthor bald?
I did catch that. Here's the thing. Those things, because I was like, oh, we're going to see red hair Lex Luthor, but we didn't. Uh-huh. It was bald. And I think one of the takeaways I had was that this was a book in which the 90s, the effects of the 90s stuck, but that, you know, was not actually set during, you know, was set sometime after that time.
Yeah. History has continued to move on, right?
Yeah.
The time has continued to roll. But still, I mean, there should have been something there. And I was also struggling with, shouldn't Supergirl be Matrix?
Yeah, fair point.
You know, I mean, wasn't that? I didn't go back to research that, but I'm like, she's still Matrix?
No, she's Karen.
Oh, that's a huge disappointment.
Yeah. So I mean, those are things that I'm like, you know, and particularly since this is written by Dan Jurgens, he knows better than that. I don't get that. I don't get why why the some of the choices were made that were made, except that maybe they thought that a new audience wouldn't understand those things. You know, they wouldn't understand.
It's definitely a mix of the that continuity and, you know, just kind of the iconic images of the characters, interpretations of the characters.
But yeah, and for a moment, you know, with the Batgirl, Supergirl, you know, being the preeminent heroes of this world, I thought maybe we were in that Elseworlds book for a moment. You know, that's the universe where Supergirl and Batgirl are the lead superheroes. There's an Elseworlds book that does that, and I was like, oh, maybe this is the universe. No, this is and I had to correct myself. No, this is Zero Hour. That wouldn't align. Anyway, as someone who really loved the 90s era comics, and as someone who really loved Zero Hour, I think I was largely disappointed by this book, even though I enjoyed some of the nostalgic aspects. And I think a lot of my enjoyment could have been recovered had they just drawn Parallax correctly. Because, boy, the young Hal Jordan as Parallax really ticked me off.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. There were some of those things were minor annoyances for me, but overall I did enjoy the book. Mm-hmm. It is a fine, you know, much like these, you know, we have the 30th anniversary of Death and Return of Superman and the 30th anniversary of the death of Superman. You know, this is kind of in that same, what I want to see is a 30th anniversary Nightfall.
Yeah.
Yes. Give me a
30th. It was nice seeing Azrael in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice seeing Azrael. So it would be cool to see a 30th anniversary Nightfall, even though unfortunately some of the key artists of that Batman arc are no longer with us, but I would like to see that. But this one, it was fine. You know, it definitely scratched that nostalgic itch. You know, there were some annoyances to Aaron's point, but you know, I did enjoy seeing some of that character, you know, some of that time period played out again, like we said, Azrael, seeing broken back Bruce Wayne, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a fun book. It's a fine throwaway tale with some very pretty art.
It was nice to see Wave Rider again. He's not one of my favorite characters, but I do enjoy how he's drawn. Yeah. So Wayne, what did you think?
He hasn't read it yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know until this morning when I was looking at what you guys had read that it was new content. When it came out, I thought it was just a reprint.
Oh, you thought that was a reprint.
So I didn't pick it up until this morning.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to let us know what you think. You know, we're talking about nothing but event books today because, you know, kind of hopping over to the other side of the fence.
Well, and let me preface by saying, you know, I fear that we have harshed everyone's mellow by our comments about Absolute Power and about the Zero Hour 30th anniversary. But I got to tell you.
Oh, the rest of this podcast is nothing but positivity, people.
But nothing but glee.
Wow, we had a very different take on this next book then.
We have come through the darkness and emerged into the light.
No, Wayne's still in the darkness.
Yeah, but no, nobody cares about Wayne. So.
That's why we didn't tell him Zero Hour's new content. No, I'm just kidding. So let me start off by saying Aliens versus Avengers number one by Jonathan Hickman and Esad Ribic, who was those guys were the creative team on the Secret Wars crossover. You know, they've done a lot of stuff since then. I think Esad Ribic also was the artist on Eternals with Kieran Gillen. So I was totally thrown off. Marvel intentionally misadvertised this book.
You know, yeah, the cover's a big fat liar.
Yeah, the cover's a lie, right? Because it looks like it's set in modern day, and I'm like, how are they going to play this out? You know, how are the aliens going to fight the Avengers in a modern day story unless it's an Elseworlds title? Well, my answer was very quickly, or my question was very quickly answered in that this is very much an alternate future title in which aliens have taken over. I shouldn't say Earth, but a good portion, you know, of Earth, and that the Avengers have lost. And so this is the remnants of the Avengers picking up the pieces of what's left.
Yeah, I expect they may do a time travel thing to reset some stuff.
I kind of do, too.
That was my big issue, is I went into this expecting and looking forward to seeing the aliens showing up on Earth and the Avengers trying to fight it and seeing some chest bursting of the heroes we know and love, and instead we get this dark future with none of the main Avengers, just you know, like Miles Morales and Captain Marvel, I guess, is, counts as a main Avenger. But
yeah, you got Bruce Banner.
True. But that's the thing, we get, they keep talking about the events that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
And what I wanted out of the book was those early days, not a, like, I love post-apocalyptic end of the world darkness stories. And I will say the book itself, it's an enjoyable story, but I feel so bait and switch because the story I want to read is the one that they talk about that happened, not the one they're actually giving me.
Yeah. And it did feel a little bait and switchy to me. That being said, once I got my mindset right on, okay. Now, I was, because I did not read spoilers for this book. I went in just knowing it's Aliens versus Avengers and having the same expectations as Wayne. But I genuinely loved this book. I loved the story that it told. I loved, I love that Jonathan Hickman has figured out how to be human. And because it's I've always loved Jonathan Hickman, right?
His AI got an upgrade. So
yeah, exactly. You know, I've always loved Jonathan Hickman's writing. You know, he's won Writer of the Year multiple times on our Funny Book Awards. But in recent years, he has figured out how to show love, human emotion between characters, without everyone being so calculated and cold. Right. And so you see, Bruce Banner and Valeria Richards have kind of a grandfather, granddaughter relationship that's established after the Fantastic Four has died. And I really liked that relationship in this book and liked how it was heartbreaking, not to spoil it, but heartbreaking how it broke, how it wrapped up. I also liked how they incorporated Weyland Yutani into the story, and old man Weyland, especially for someone like me who has seen all the Aliens movies and seen, old man Weyland in some of the movies.
Yeah, for me, who has never seen any of the movies, I was super confused when they talked about the one man who saw this coming and prepared the city. And then they give us this old man that I assumed was a robot because he's got the head holes that the androids did in the beginning. I have no clue who this guy's supposed to be.
So Weyland Yutani, think of them as basically, they're just like the science company that always does wrong, right? Like they are just your bad science company from, any science fiction story or comic book has some type of science fiction company or science company that's always like doing something wrong, building engines of destruction, creating life that goes awry, whatever. That's Weyland Yutani in the Alien universe. They are just the bad corporation. They're the big pharma of the Aliens universe. Well, he's the head of it. That's Weyland himself.
I agree with everything you said, Paul, and I just want to add that Asad Ribic is the perfect artist for this book.
Yes.
It looks so cinematic. It looks so much of a piece with the Alien movies. I've just recently rewatched Prometheus and Covenant in preparation to see Romulus. I like Prometheus. Cannot abide Covenant.
I agree. I would actually agree with that.
Yeah. The only thing that I like about Covenant is Michael Fassbender. I feel like the Daniel David story is interesting, but the rest of it's just garbage. And I have said this before, but the thing that I hate about both Prometheus and Covenant is that the way the story progresses is with the main characters just being stupid, being just morons. Like, how did you learn how to fly a spaceship if you're this dumb?
Well, one thing I do, Aaron, not to spoil anything, and I feel like this is only minor spoilers, so you won't be upset, is that your rewatch of those movies will be rewarded when you watch Alien Romulus.
I thought it felt like I needed to refresh myself, and I'd only seen Covenant the one time. I've seen Prometheus several times, but I know that makes me a minority, but I do really rather like Prometheus.
I will say there's a concept near the end of this book that I liked that, again, I would have loved better if – would have loved that a lot better if it were modern day and not some dark future. But I like having the symbiote, take on the parasite.
Yeah. I genuinely enjoyed this book. Now, I also read – I got caught up on Predator versus Wolverine and Predator versus Black Panther just to kind of check those out. I can't recommend either of them.
Wow, I really loved Predator versus Wolverine.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay. I thought it was, for me, Predator versus Wolverine, like, it was what I expected, and it was told, and it ended, and it was fine. It didn't stick with me the same way like Batman versus Predator did back in the day, or Superman versus Alien. But Black Panther versus Predator, I hated. I genuinely, for it is just the wordiest that ever wordied. I also don't like in the Predator books that they really like same, and it's the same author. It's Benjamin Percy. Because the Predators themselves are silent characters, it's their stories are told through exposition. And in my mind, it's far too much exposition and far too much explanation for a comic book. Let the art tell the story in the same. That's what Predator is all about, right? We never, no one ever explained the story of the Predators to us in those first few movies. It was all told through, you know, your interpretation of this, you know, voiceless character. And in these books, it's like, these two are brothers and they're trying to appease their father and they're at war with each other. And I'm like, it's far too much exposition. Whereas I think Aliens versus Avengers gets it right. And it should, right? Jonathan Hickman is one of the best comic book writers of all time. And, you know, teamed up, you know, superstar team up of Esad Ribic. This is just, I hope the next three issues are as strong as this one, because it'll be one that I will revisit in the same way as I revisited Batman versus Predator.
Well, and I do feel like we're going to see the battle that Wayne wants to see. I think we're going to see those early stories either in flashback or in a prequel comic. For whatever reason, they decided to tell this story first. But I can't imagine that they don't tell that story. So our next book, and Wayne, did you read the Conan book with us?
No, I'm not a Conan reader.
Okay. So it's just Paul and I on this one. I have to say, Conan, Battle of the Black Stone, is not only another winner in the current run of Conan from Jim Zub and the good folks over at Titan Comics. This is setting up what feels like it's going to be a favorite event book for me. I thought this book set up the action so expertly. And, you know, in the Free Comic Book Day book, in the preview, essentially, we were told that this event will cover, will involve many Robert E. Howard characters across the various timelines. And what I like about it is that it creates these moments across the continuum without putting Solomon Kane in Conan's, you know, world, you know, without bringing everybody into Siberia or something like that yet. But the events are happening at the same time. They're happening simultaneously across the timeline. It's like linking these stories. And, you know, this, you know, one of the things about Robert E. Howard is that he was a pen pal of H.P. Lovecraft, and he would include mythos characters into his Conan stories, his Solomon Kane stories, etc. And that's what we're seeing here. This, you know, Battle of the Black Stone is invoking some very Cthulhu-esque type themes, and I'm just so here for it. I think the artwork is just amazing. The visual storytelling is off the charts. I can't get over how much I'm enjoying this book. And I'm enjoying, you know, a lot of times you get these kind of books that are involving so many disparate characters in different settings. And so many times you're like, can we just get back to Conan? And that's not the case here, because I'm enjoying El Barak. I'm enjoying Solomon Kane. I'm enjoying all of these characters that I've got so very little experience with, because each one of them is pushing the story forward. I never at any point in reading this issue did I feel like anybody was holding it back. And I just was so excited about how lovely this book is. It is drawn well. It is written well. The back matter. I loved the essay at the back of the book about El Barak. Yeah. I fucking love this book, Paul.
Same here. And Wayne, I understand your Conan issues. What I would say is Conan's name is above the title because he's the brand name. But this is very much a Howard verse book, in that, you know, Conan is a key player, but so are El Barak, so is Solomon Kane, so is Dark Agnes. And if you're not familiar with those characters, that's okay too, because it'll get you familiar. There is a free comic book day prelude to this.
Yeah.
That you can get on Comixology that, you know, that shows some of the characters and has a nice little essay explaining exactly what Aaron said, the connection to the Cthulhu mythos, the, you know, how Howard himself created this continuity of all his characters that he created, you know, throughout his lifetime. He did find ways to connect them. And that's very much what this is. This is an event book that finds a story to connect those characters and not just like subtle hints that they have a connection.
Yeah.
Well, a free comic book day, free book is certainly the right price.
Yeah. I would check it out. I think you'll be sold on it. And this first issue, it is so there is a digital exclusive edition, and that's the one I picked up. There's two versions.
I don't know what the difference between the digital exclusive and the newsstand version is.
I think
because I didn't feel like there was any
is the edition of the covers.
Okay.
I think the digital exclusive edition also shows the covers. Which one did you pick up?
I picked up the digital exclusive.
Yeah, I did too. So I don't know if – because there's also a preview, the first chapter of the novel. So there is a novel coming out that also kind of ties in to the story. And so there was a preview of that. It's 55 pages. So I picked up that version. But yeah, Aaron, I love this. I love this. I loved – you know, because I do like Conan. I do. Yeah. I have – you know, I find he is a character that – that some authors get right, some authors get wrong, but I love the extended Robert E. Howard verse.
Yeah,
you know, just as much as I love Conan, because I love Solomon Kane, you know, as a character. Same. And some characters I like just based on concept alone, because I'm not as familiar with characters like El Barak and Dark Agnes, but I have come to appreciate them in this story.
Well, and Dark Agnes is one that I've got very little familiarity with, but. Mm. Yeah, it's funny. I was like, okay, well, I guess here's where things are going to slow down. Nope. Nope. They gave me just enough about her that I was like, okay, I think I'm curious, you know. And I think this is a great way to introduce people to some of these other other characters, other properties, and maybe it rolls out a book later on for these
characters. And you can see how these characters have influenced other characters since.
Yeah.
Right? I mean – It is just a well.
Did you read the El Barak essay in the back?
Oh yeah, of course. I love essays like that.
The essay was great. It reveals that this El Barak character, you know, this gunslinger character, and you know, eventually, like, you know, kind of like an Indiana Jones Fortune and Glory kind of guy later on, was a character that Howard created like when he was 10 years old.
Yeah, you know? And then just brought back to life after he got popular.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I mean, like, and so many of his stories exist in fragments from, you know, Howard's notes. And you know, I don't think I've ever read anything, you know, featuring El Barak before. I'm fascinated by all of this. And I love that the deep dive that Titan Comics is taking into the Howard verse. I love how seriously they're taking it and the honor and respect they're applying to the work that was done in the 70s with the Marvels run. I really appreciate the care they're taking here. And I got to say, I like how overall, you know, they are linking arms with the other Conan media, you know, like the novels that are out. You know, they've got a new run of newly written Conan novels that are out, and they're, you know, they're pimping those in the books. I dig it. I dig it. I'm very much here for this big Conan event.
Yeah, Titan Comics is definitely taking the same tact as Mad Cave Studios in that they are,
but I think doing it a little better.
Yeah, doing it better, right? Because, for example, you know, this Conan, this Battle of the Blackstone is significantly better than the Defenders of the Earth. But I mean the multimedia, multimedia tie-ins to the characters. Because, you know, the Defenders of the Earth, you know, the Flash Gordon books and stuff like that also advertise the toys, the comic strips, and things like that in much the same way Titan is also advertising these novels. And finding a way to literally have a Battle of the Blackstone novel, you know, tie into this later on in the run. So I, which I'm looking forward to. I did not read the first chapter yet, but I plan to. And I'm I mean of the you know the novel that they had included. But I plan to, and I you know if the if this storyline continues, I will also pick up the novel when it comes out in November.
Yep. Well, it's great stuff. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What other great stuff is coming out next week?
Well, I can't promise that it's going to be great.
No, but you I can have to promise, Paul.
Well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 from IDW, from Jason Aaron and Raphael Albuquerque is the artist on issue 2. Should be pretty solid. Now from and also from Image Comics, we get Transformers issue 12. Should be pretty great. Okay, so as far as the rest, we have a couple of DC books coming out. We've got the latest issue of Robin Lives from the DC Vault, Death in the Family. Issue 3 comes out as well.
I don't think we talked about that on the show. I don't think
you guys talked about it. Yeah,
we talked about the first issue. We loved it.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that series. I am enjoying the difference of the storytelling there. So I'm getting a kick out of that.
Yeah. And from Marvel Comics, we have Amazing Spider-Man issue 57, which we normally don't talk about Amazing Spider-Man because it's so inconsistent. But this is the, you know, they've got a new Tombstone storyline out right now. I picked up, you know, the previous issue that came out last week, and I really genuinely liked it. This run on Amazing Spider-Man is really only good when Tombstone's in the book, and this is kind of the wrap up of that Tombstone storyline. We also get those X-Men from the Ashes books continuing. We get Uncanny X-Men issue 2, and we get the first issue of the new Wolverine book written by Saladin Ahmed, who is the current writer on Daredevil as well. And we also get Avengers Assemble issue 1 of 5. It's a 5-issue miniseries written by Steve Orlando, covered by Lanil Francis Yu, interior art by Corey Smith. And the only reason I mentioned this one is that this does spin out of the events of Blood Hunt. So, you know, this kind of features Captain America, who has formed, you know, Steve Rogers, Captain America, you know, because we know the main Avengers book written by Jeb, I forget his last name, but, you know, Jeb, you know, features, you know, Falcon Cap, right?
Right, right.
And so, you know, this is Steve Rogers and his emergency response squad. So it's kind of a takeoff of those Avengers tie-in books to Blood Hunt. And his emergency response squad features Shang-Chi, Hawkeye, She-Hulk, Hercules, Wonder Man. So it's kind of like a second Avengers book featuring Steve Rogers.
It's a lot of bricks on that team.
It is. Jet McKay is the Jet McKay was who I was thinking of. But yeah, this is written by Steve Orlando. So I might check out this other Avengers book because you know that's an interesting story.
Well, I've been hungering for a good Avengers book. I'd like to have one of those.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Fingers crossed. So,
yeah. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Tell us which Robert E. Howard character you like. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comment on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, let's do this again next week, guys.
Yeah, glad to have you back, Wayne. Catch you later.
Glad to be back.
he sounds happy to be back, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
You can feel it. You can feel it. It's tangible. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.